Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everyone is having a terrific day today, and it's nice and sunny down here in Florida as always. And how are you doing today, Deb?
You know, Austin, there are days that are absolutely incredible, and then there are days that it's beyond belief incredible. This is one of those beyond belief incredible days. I've had a good day. Got to hang out with Sharon, your wonderful mom, this morning, and got to run over to Tampa for a bit. Got to get a vacuum cleaner service, and I met one of the world's greatest vacuum cleaner sales guys today. Hey, you guys are family. You get to hear it all. And it was good. I mean, he really did a good job. I mean, I've got a good vacuum cleaner now, and he fixed it. It had a 5-year warranty on it, and covered it all, and it was good. Good. He's good. He's a good man, good kid. Everybody's a kid to me now. Probably 30 years old, 35 years old. So yeah, it's been a good day. The weather's beautiful. The humidity's drier today. It doesn't feel nearly as warm outside. And so yeah, this is the day the Lord hath made, and I will rejoice and I will be glad in it. And I'm just happy to be here. And by the way, I'm getting some great letters from a lot of great folks. Thank you for those. You guys are awesome. And I tell you what, it's nice having family with me every day from 3 to 4. And it's just a blast doing the show. And it's something that we enjoy doing. And I'm glad that so many people enjoy the show. And you constantly are telling us that. And guys, I want to say again, this is from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for supporting us by getting your vitamins from us. I mean, we make the highest quality nutraceutical supplements in the world. We only use a FDA registered drug laboratory. I mean, we have the best products you could possibly buy. If I could make them better, I'd make them better. That's why they work. So when you get them from us, you support the show. And I want to thank you again at the beginning of the show for your support. Austin, what's your first story?
Well, this one I found to be interesting because I talk about this a lot, and the reason why I talk about this is because of our younger generation that has been so exposed to Wi-Fi and gaming and iPads and electronics on a regular basis that, again, I know a lot of times our customers and our listeners have heard me talk about this, but I bring up new stories on a regular basis primarily for all of our new listeners to make sure you understand that you have to raise your kids. You cannot allow them to turn into basically electronically raised babies. Baby, so to speak. Perfect example now, they're finding more and more and more kids are basically having to go to video game rehab and having to get help now basically from people because they're so addicted to the gaming. There's another article here that I found earlier today out of the UK. It said 9-year-old girl is being sent to rehab after wetting herself while refusing to quit playing the game Fortnite. Researchers are saying the video games and Wi-Fi exposure affect kids' brains the same way as drugs do. They were saying that the girl was so hooked to the game she would not even go to the toilet anymore. Her husband saw her light on in the middle of the night and found her sitting on a urine-soaked cushion playing the game, refusing to turn it off. She became very aggressive at school, began falling asleep at school. The parents then discovered charges on their credit card for $67 a month to Microsoft on the credit card statement that she had basically gotten a hold of, and she was buying all these updates and apps for this. So they basically tore the Xbox out of the house, took all the electronics out, got rid of them, and basically had to take her to basically a child gaming addict specialist. As sad as that is, that's what we have now. And the thing you have to realize with this, guys, is this kid is was enabled from the beginning. If she didn't have an Xbox in her house, I mean, she's 9 years old. She didn't have the $300-$400 to go buy an Xbox right now, or whatever they cost now. So when you buy these things for your children, if you decide to do so, make sure you're using it more as a privilege and not a right. As in, hey, you got all your homework done. Hey, you got your chores done. Hey, you got your outside work done. You can go play on, you know, whatever game you deem to be appropriate for their age for 30 minutes or 45 minutes or something like that, and then game time's over, and then they need to go back and finish up whatever else they're doing. But allowing these kids to basically have unfettered access to the TV, to the internet, to the gaming systems, and not monitor them closely, it's becoming very, very, very addictive, Dad. So I just want to kind of bring that up again because it seems to be becoming more of a problem every single year.
Well, it's the dopamine triggers. I mean, these kids are basically being programmed by these game manufacturers to constantly crave the dopamine. I remember years ago, Harrison, it's been 8-9 years ago, I was getting really caught up in some of the Call of Duty things that you had left here. And you remember this. And, you know, because you'd already moved out, and Harrison was caught up in this is the old stuff. This is the stuff that looked like it was all fake, right? This wasn't the real stuff. And I remember I finally came out, and he started getting aggressive with his sisters, but he was like, you know, shooting people constantly in this game. And I had to tell him, and I had to say, this needs to go away. And then I remember, if you remember, Austin, I called you up and I said, okay, I can't have this here. This is something I don't want to try to deal with, trying to control, pull it out. And you did. You pulled it out of here and got rid of it. See, people need to realize, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, this is a major problem that we have. And, you know, if you shoot enough people in a game and you see enough stuff in games, you'll start exhibiting basically the emotions of someone who has PTSD. Now, you thought, well, gosh, I've never heard that anywhere else. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. I'm talking about if you get into a situation where you're playing this thing hours and hours and hours and hours every day, or you're sneaking up in the middle of the night and you're playing this, and you've got groups from all over the world who join you online and you play this stuff all the time.
Yep.
And this is a very violent behavior, and you're seeing a lot of carnage and bloodshed and everything else in these movies that you're watching on this video game. And what's interesting, in fact, you and I talked about this yesterday with your Uma, with my mom. You know, my mom probably suffered from PTSD because she went through World War II in Germany. Of course, they didn't really diagnose PTSD back in the 40s or 50s. I mean, this is something that happened after the Vietnam War. They sort of realized that these people coming back messed up. And my mom was always scared. She was, in fact, a German word for it, Bange, like B-A-N-G-A, Bange. And that's not spelling it right, but that's what it sounds like. And what's interesting about this is that, you know, she was always bunga. She was always scared. And I started thinking about it, and we started talking about it with Austin yesterday, and Austin said to me, he says, you know, well, Dad, you know, she probably would have been diagnosed with PTSD, and she smoked a lot of cigarettes. She didn't smoke when she was pregnant with us, praise God. And she drank a lot of beer. Of course, Germans drink a lot of beer anyhow most of the time, unless they're just basically taught how bad it is for them as far as from an alcohol standpoint. And so it's just, she always, that's how you self-medicate. You can self-medicate with alcohol, self-medicate with nicotine. And so she did a lot of that. She went through a lot of trauma even after the war in Germany. And I remember I was on a cruise ship years ago, and I had said that my mom had left Germany in 1952 after the war and had come to the United States with my father. And the lady was on the cruise ship, and her parents were German also. She says, well, somebody got her out of Germany. You couldn't leave Germany in 1952. You couldn't just come to the United States. You had to be brought over. And I said, well, yes, my father brought her over. And he says she was very blessed because it was for many, many years, it went for a decade after the war, that much of Germany still lay in rubble. See, and guys, this is what happens with these kids. You let them play these games over and over and over again. In fact, here's an interesting article. I just pulled it up. It's PTSD patients can no longer recognize positive emotions, and this is a disturbing new study that has just been concluded. It says, this is an article by Anderson. It says, it's great that more people are becoming aware of post-traumatic stress disorder and how it affects those who are diagnosed with it. Recently, in addition to the list of PTSD effects that have been added by researchers, one a bit more alarming than others. It says that what can happen is a study has shown that people who suffer from this disorder also develop a problem in recognizing positive emotions. And since perceiving emotions is an essential skill for humans, this finding is alarming. The authors of the study wanted to learn more about PTSD patients following various trauma types. In addition, they discovered both the correlation and dissociation between the ability to recognize emotions and childhood trauma and a number of experienced traumatic events. 39 people diagnosed with PTSD, 44 traumatized healthy controls, and 35 non-traumatized healthy controls aged between 18 and 65 years old were the subjects in the study, and researchers made use of a short videos featuring actors showing different emotions at different levels of intensity. Each portrayal was done in a reflection of a normal day activity. In other words, that's how they set the controls up. And what they said, that these people had PTSD, they just didn't have the ability to pick up emotions. And they had eating and sleeping disorders, low energy. A lot of these same things, by the way, happen to you when you get addicted to video games. Eating and sleeping the problems, low energy, high levels of emotional stress, anxiety and panic attacks, social withdrawal, memory lapses, emotional numbness, reliving traumatic events, constantly avoiding the reminders of trauma. An overwhelming event happens unexpectedly, then suddenly the damage of the event is irreversible. Stressful things happen repeatedly. Traumatic experience happened during childhood. So, guys, it's really, really important when you've got a kid with a developing brain that you keep them from watching these video games with all of this carnage, all of this death, all of this killing. We have a friend of ours who's a full bird colonel in the military. In fact, she's out of the military now. She's finishing her PhD in computer science. The woman's absolutely a genius. In fact, I can tell you what she was doing. It was classified. But she was a computer person in the military. You put the math of that. And she told us that the military uses these movies, these games like Call to Duty, Call Action, all this stuff like this, these high intense definition ones, to desensitize the soldiers for battle. because they found that if they put these soldiers in these groups of people that are playing these video games for hours on end, and they end up killing hundreds of people in the video game, to them, when they get into the real-world combat situation, it's like playing a video game that they've already done hundreds, if not thousands, of times, so it's a lot easier to squeeze the trigger and shoot somebody because they've already done so. I had a gun instructor tell me one time. He said, if you want to desensitize yourself, he says, if you want to learn how to defend yourself in the event that you get attacked and somebody pulls a gun on you, he says, make sure you have a revolver. Don't use a pistol. Use a revolver. And he said, and basically make sure it's completely empty. And he says, you can dry fire at a TV screen at human beings, and it'll do the same thing as the video games because it desensitizes you to seeing humans in your sights, and you're a lot more effective at discharging the weapon because you've done it thousands, if not hundreds of times. So, guys, it's a major problem with these young kids with these video games, so you've got to learn to control it. And quite frankly, I don't have any in the house now. After that happened with Harrison 10 years ago, I yoked them all out, and I was done with it, and I don't know they're here anymore. And I know every once in a while he and Austin will hook a few up that Austin has, and they'll play a little bit, but that's very, very rare. I mean, shoot, you know, Harris is gone. He didn't live here anymore. So it's one of those things, guys. Be very, very careful. Austin, any comments to this?
No, it was good add-on, too. And also, too, what I remember your colonel friend also told you, because I discussed this with her, on a lot of these video games now, too, they have Overwatch levels where you're basically a AC-130 gunship or you're operating a drone. And if you ever see live military footage from, you know, the drone with the thermal FLIR heat signature, and you watch and you play the video games, it's almost identical because they've dialed that down to a T, and that's
right.
What they primarily train a lot of these guys on, and the exact same models and scenes and everything they do on those video games, they allow to be released into the public, the same ones that they allow the operators to train on as far as for drone strikes and AC-130 gun strikes and everything else. So, yes, it's a very serious issue. Like I said, if you're, you know, older teenager and you can handle some of that stuff and you want to play it on a rare occasion, I don't see a huge issue with it. The biggest thing you have to make sure is you're not letting young children play it, and you're also, too, not becoming obsessed with it. You know, I've used it before sometimes when I've done, like, cardio in the morning. I get on, like, the elliptical for 20 minutes. Something different to kind of take your mind off of when you're getting leaner and training and stuff like that. But just sitting down and playing it for hours and hours and hours and hours on end all night long like some of these guys do, there's no healthy aspect to that whatsoever, not for the brain or the body, Dad.
That's right. By the way, loneliness is one of the reasons people do a lot of this. Now, it's been found that loneliness can actually damage the heart muscle and cause premature death. I thought that was really interesting. This is a group of research that was done from Denmark. It had 13,000 people in it for the effects of a deficit of social networks related to the cardiovascular health, and patients who suffered with either heart arrhythmia, heart valve disease, or heart failure, or ischemic heart disease. And it was found that when people were lonely, they were three times more likely to be depressed or anxious. In addition to that, it also lowered their quality of life, and it also showed a much higher risk of developing or dying of coronary artery disease. You know, guys, the Bible tells us in Hebrews 10:25, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together, as some of you are in the habit of doing. You've got to have relationships with people. You have to have people come to you and talk to you. And, you know, and I know a lot of you, you know, use this show as an access point for us to hang out with you every day, and that's a great idea. But you also need to be having people in your life that you can talk to and shake their hand and say hi. And a lot of times you can find those types of people in church. And you have to understand, though, that if you're going to have risk heart damage, et cetera, because of loneliness, it's really, really important that you try to integrate yourself more into a social setting as much as you possibly can. Another article, autoimmune disease has been linked now to metal implants and vaccine ingredients, which, of course, that's no surprise to any of our listeners. But experts believe that the development of autoimmune disease is influenced by the genetics, and also epigenetics, as well as other factors such as infections, pharmaceutical drugs, and environmental toxins. So finally, people are beginning to realize that 15% of the population has metal hypersensitivity that predisposes them to autoimmune disease, such as the metals, including aluminum and mercury. Metal implants, dentures, and fillings can all be culprits in triggering autoimmune disease. Mercury-based silver dental amalgams, we've already talked about that many, many times in the show. Also remember, this is an extensive peer-reviewed studies, and it tested the link with autoimmune disease. I've told you many times that Morgellons primarily affects people who have heavy metal toxicity from mercury and aluminum already in their bodies. Morgellons basically is an opportunistic type disease. If your immune system is strong enough, it can fight this stuff off in most cases. The problem is when people have weakened immune systems or autoimmune diseases like this, often this Morgellons can take over the body, which of course many people believe that are being sprayed. This Morgellons type of whatever it is, you know, cross-domain species that's being sprayed on us via the geoengineering. So guys, just think through all of this stuff. Make sure you get vitamin D on a regular basis, at least 3 of our 10,000 milligram IU capsules every single week. Make sure you take your potassium iodine, 12.5 milligrams every single day. Get 2 to 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C every single day. Those are the ones that I'm always so careful on. Also, turmeric is super important. In fact, I just took we ate at Chipotle's a few minutes ago, Austin, with your mom and I had lunch together. We split a Chipotle's meal. And we got home, and I was itching a little bit. I told Sharon, I said, I got something in that Chipotle's I wasn't supposed to have. So I just took ate turmeric, and it's already getting better. Turmeric works amazing. It's like a miracle product, and it's just so good as far as what it does, as far as helping to slow down the aging brain and making sure your brain stays really healthy as you get older. What do you think about these stories, Austin? What's your next one?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It is. The turmeric's so effective, you know, especially as a really, really good, clean anti-inflammatory. And it's funny you bring that up because I just saw an article earlier. It's a long one, so I won't go into a lot of detail to it. But it's really good revolving around turmeric because, as you guys know, there's really no true pharmaceutical interventions or any real reverse to Alzheimer's disease. You guys know that. And there's another article that just came out now that shows that turmeric extract, the main ingredient curcumin in it, and a study published in Cellular Physiology and Biochemistry basically provided that the study authors described as an effective therapeutic strategy to reverse age-related Alzheimer's with curcumin and turmeric. They used basically studies on 24-month-old male rodents, and they were given dietary curcumin with young control rodents 6 months of age as well, and they said there was remarkable restoration with the ability of the blood vessels to naturally relax in the aging rats. And so there's a lot of cool stuff in the article. I mean, it's really, really, really heavily documented. But again, every time we turn around, you know, it's ironic because people are like, well, you talk about turmeric a lot. You can't not talk about turmeric a lot because
that's
of
right.
How much stuff it does for the body, honestly. What it does for the brain, what it does for the inflammation, what it does for the heart. I mean, it's an incredible product. So, yeah, I mean, I take it every single day. I always keep a bottle in my house. A lot of times I only take, you know, like 2, maybe 4 a day on a regular basis. But if I feel anything or I have like a, you know, shoulder pain or elbows are getting tight from a workout, you know, I'll pop like 4 of them with breakfast and 4 of them with lunch. And like that said, I mean, you can tell immediately how quickly it works. And I told you guys this before on the show, but I'm going to say it again. In Florida down here during the oak season, the pollen season it's horrible down here. I mean, there's pollen everywhere, covering all the vehicles. And Lana used to have the worst allergies of anybody I'd really seen or been around a lot. And we started her on a very, very high dose of the turmeric. And we tried a lot of different stuff before and just could not get a lot of good results out of it. And the turmeric force that we carry, it literally knocked it out of her in about a month and a half. And now, even when pollen season starts, she literally only has to take, you know, maybe a half dozen or so a day for a few weeks, and that's it. Doesn't have any more issues with it. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer of turmeric too, Dad.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, new studies have shown on 3 different continents, actually, that the higher recommended doses of vitamin D prevent cancer. I mean, we've been telling this for years and years because vitamin D is the activating my molecule necessary in order to activate the macrophages for the white blood cell system. According to utilizing combined data from 17 studies that included more than 12,000 people from the U.S., Europe, and Asia, found that optimal levels of D3 for colon cancer prevention are higher than the current U.S. recommendation of 600 international units per day, which, by the way, 600 international units a day, I was making one of the record. That's a joke. That's a joke. Even if you take 10,000 of mine 3 times a week, that's 30,000. You'd be taking about 4,000 to 5,000 a day. That's kind of your minimum. D will do a lot of stuff for you. It improves muscle function, blunts your appetite, protects lung function. It can actually help you shed weight, lowers blood pressure. It can shut down cancer cells. It lowers your risk of mortality, overall death, reduces the risk of Alzheimer's disease, affects hundreds of genes and disease-preventing potential, and basically reduces the risk of osteoporosis, and it helps reduce the risk of depression. And so it's very, very, very important that everybody takes vitamin D. Now, vitamin D, though, you got to think about this for a second. Vitamin D is like a hormone in the body. It's the same thing with melatonin. you got to be taking really high quality vitamin D. We use lanolin-based vitamin D. We don't use synthetic D. And I will not take things like melatonin and vitamin D that are synthetic. I don't do that because I'm not putting these things that act as hormones in the body synthetically into my body because it's just not healthy for you. That's why at Health Masters, we simply don't do that because, quite frankly, it's just not something that's healthy to do, you know, taking synthetic supplements anyhow. And by the way, there are 200 ordinary medications that can cause depression and suicidal thoughts. We covered part of this the other day, but I kind of wanted to say something else about that. You know, it'd be difficult to overlook the epidemic of depression that has struck the United States over the past decades. The CDC recently found that death by suicide was up more than 30%, and the use of antidepressants has vaulted 65% in the past 15 years. Many different theories as to why this is happening, but now there's more probable cause to be considered. The fact that we have over 200 different drugs that can cause serious problems with depression, including suicidal symptoms. Some of these are analgesics. This is acetaminophen, hydromorphone, anticonvulsants that people take on an ongoing basis, antidepressants, anti-ozolics. I don't know why they have to make this stuff so hard to pronounce. And I know how to pronounce this stuff. I got to look at it twice, okay? The hypnotics, the stuff they have on that, gastrointestinal agents, hormones, hormone modifiers, respiratory agents, other therapeutic classes or many, many of those different types of drugs. And so these kind of drugs, hypersensitives, corticosteroids, gastrointestinal agents, hormones, hormone modifiers, respiratory agents, and other therapeutic classes, this is some crazy stuff. There are over 200 drugs now that have been linked to depression and to suicide, and we wonder why in the world so many people are staying depressed, Austin, and why so many people are committing suicide. And guys, remember, 5-HTP, 5-hydroxyl-tryptophan, along with cod liver oil, along with activated B vitamins, it's unbelievable what it does as far as helping your moods to stay good all of the time. So it's so important for me today to talk to you because, quite frankly, you know, you have to understand that, you know, if you eat the right foods, you take the right supplements, and you have the right lifestyle, you can stay healthy almost all the time. Now, I want to cover one other thing, too. Why does the law forbid the medicinal use of natural substances? Now, I want to cover this for a second. This is very important because now we're dealing with marijuana. We're dealing with kratom. We're dealing with all kinds of natural products that have been shown to have a high, high effective rate as far as curing diseases. Why are we not allowed to use the word cure or to mitigate or to diagnose? Why aren't we not allowed to say this product will cure such and such or do this? And it's interesting to me because the average out-of-pocket cost for obtaining a new drug approval is about $2.6 billion. I want to repeat that. In order to get the FDA to approve of a drug so you can make a claim on it runs around $2.6 billion. Therefore, an investor putting capital into bringing to market a substance does not lend itself to market exclusivity and cannot be patented, cannot get a return on the investment of the $2.6 billion. Basically, that's committing economic suicide. So in other words, if you found a product that treated depression and you spent $2.6 billion and you couldn't find a way to patent it, everybody else would jump on the bandwagon, start promoting it, and also say it cures depression, and you'd be basically out your $2.6 billion. This is the problem that we have with the Food and Drug Administration right now. So this type of approval ratings basically, I consider human sacrifice is all it is. I mean, how in the world can this happen? So then what happens, these big drug companies come in, and they find a way to basically, in many cases, not all times, they'll find a way to bogus up a study with controls to take a drug to cure a disease, spend the $2.6 billion. They sell $20 or $30 billion of the product. It's found out to kill people. It's found out it doesn't work. But they made $30 billion on it. They cleared, after all expenses, $25 billion. So now they pay out $3 billion in fines and lost things. They still net out $20 billion. This is what's going on. So that's why if over 50% of the drugs that hit the market within 5 years are either pulled off the market or have their warning labels changed. 50%. This is what happens all the time, guys. And so, I mean, let's look at this for information. Breast cancer alone, I can pull you up 91 articles on natural treatment protocols for breast cancer. Colorectal cancer, 34. Colon cancer, 61. Prostate cancer, 61. Pancreatic cancer, 35. Cancers that are drug resistant, 50. Lung cancers that are 63. Liver cancer is 46. Cancer metastases, 36. Skin cancer, 19. There are all kinds of ways that you can treat products, treat disease without using prescription medication, but you can't legally do it, nor can you legally promote it, or nor can you legally sell it, nor can you say that this is what this product does. And so what's happened is this petrochemical, pharmaceutical, Rockefeller, Rothschild industrial complex has taken mainstream medicine through the Rockefellers, through the Rothschilds, and have forced it into a model in which only drugs that are approved through the Food and Drug Administration can be used to cure or treat any disease. But the problem is they don't talk about all the horrible side effects of all of these drugs. I mean, so think through this for a second. If you've got a problem with high blood pressure, if you've got a problem with high blood sugar, doesn't it make sense to search online and find natural treatment protocols that are available for high blood pressure or high blood sugar, or how to have maintain healthy sugar support or healthy blood pressure support without starting to take all of these drugs that have all of these horrible side effects? And of course, the worst one is depression. And that's what I always tell people, Austin, and we've talked about it so many times. There's so many drugs for depression, especially the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that are so stinking addictive that when people get on them, it's literally impossible to come off of these things. And the suicide rates go through the roof when they try to get off of them, especially when they try to do it without going through their medical doctors and titrating and dosing down, all this other kind of stuff. And you've got to think through it with me for a second. Why in the world would you take a child who's been diagnosed with ADD, okay, and put them on a class 2 drug in the same category with morphine, opium, Percodan, and Demerol, like Ritalin or Adderall, without trying dietary approaches first, without looking at red dyes and blue dyes, without looking at hypoglycemia? Why would you try to all? Why would you put them on a drug that's super addictive, a methylphenidate, same category, you know, with Ritalin's methylphenidate, same, almost identical to methamphetamine? I mean, this is like meth on the street. I mean, and we slap it to these children like it's M&Ms, and we say, okay, give them this drug because the school nurse said to give it to them. I mean, are you kidding me? Really? The school nurse? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, come on, guys. Think through it for a second, guys. Why in the world should we try the most invasive approach? It's kind of like saying this. You got a splinter in your big toe. Well, shoot. We just cut the leg off at the hip. We can forget about that big toe. Don't have to worry about that anymore. Okay, well, it's an effective treatment for the splinter. It will get rid of the splinter, cutting the leg off at the hip. Or you cut it off at the knee. Or how about you just get a needle and poke it and clean it up, peroxide, get splinter out. How about that? Don't start with the amputation. And that's basically what we do in mainstream medicine, Austin. We start with the amputation and we think, okay, what about the side effects now? Oh, well, too bad. We should have thought about it before we amputated it. See, this is the problem that we run into. And so that's why we don't make claims at Health Masters. We don't talk to you about diseases. We tell you to talk to your medical doctors about that. And why is that? Because we're trying to do the best we can to provide super high quality natural supplements that help to maintain and support your bodily functions. And that's what we try to do. Anything you want to add to that, Oz?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because, I mean, you really did just kind of nail it on the head with that perfect analogy. Is it almost seems like more and more I talk to people, you know, people are having an issue with a over or underactive thyroid, thyroid gets removed. Oh, people are having issues getting sick, so tonsils come out. Oh, people are having issues with gallstones. Oh, remove the gallbladder. Guys, these are important organs. They weren't placed there by accident. You didn't just have God building you and he's like, oh, whoops, I dropped a gallbladder in there. Well, we'll just leave it. It's there. You know, we'll just let it, you know, it is what it is. We'll let it just stay in there. Guys, there's some very important reasons why these organs are here. And more now I feel like Dad just said, the approach from these doctors is a lot of time, it's like, oh, you got a splinter, well, we'll just take your whole foot off. Or we'll be slightly less invasive, we'll just take your toe off. And you're kind of like, but I like my big toe, can't we just poke the splinter out? No, you don't want to do that. That's too time intensive. It's much easier just to chop the toe off. It'll fix it, I promise you, 100%. You will not have an issue with that splinter anymore. Well, but isn't there another option? Nope, you need to do it. It's gonna make your whole entire leg rot off if you don't take the splinter out, check toe off. And you're like, okay, and then these people do it. And the thing about it is here at Health Masters, you know, if you are on the fence, you're getting multiple recommendations, that's what we're here to do, is give you guys natural supplement options. We can't give you medical advice on anything, but if you call up and you say, hey, what about a gallbladder flat fast? I'm thinking about getting rid of gallstones, or I'm thinking about trying to make my gallbladder healthier. Great. We have it posted on the website. You can look at it right here. Gallbladder 3-Day Apple Juice Fast. There are all types of options for natural approaches, because once you go that medical route and you decide you want to start removing organs out of your body, we're out of the loop. There's nothing else we can do. You know, we can give you still natural supplements and say, hey, this may be a good supplement, but on the other hand, too, you really got to check with your doctor now. If he was the one that wanted to remove it, you know, you need to get his approval before you start throwing other stuff in there. And as sad as that is, that's something that's very, very, very common now. And it's just something that everybody has to understand. Also, too, in other news...
Let's talk about the gallbladder for a second, okay?
Yes, okay.
This is super important, okay? What happens is when you digest, when you chew your food, okay, you have salivary amylase in your mouth, and that starts to digest the process of carbohydrates and starches. Then it goes into your stomach through your esophagus, and it basically... It gets whacked with a bunch of HCl, hydrochloric acid. And that hydrochloric acid, it basically breaks everything up and starts breaking up the molecules, so it'll be small enough and absorbable enough that our body can digest it through the intestinal tract. Now, the problem is that we call it chyme in medicine, what's in the stomach at that point. It's very, very acidic because it's been mixed with acid. And that, so it has to come through the small, it has to go from the stomach, it has to go into the small intestine. But what it does, there's a duct there from the gallbladder that releases bile right there to neutralize the acidity of the chyme, so it doesn't burn your small intestine, and also helps to break up the oils and the fats. Now, if you start taking that gallbladder out, then you really lose the reservoir of that ability of the body to produce large amounts of bile. And, you know, and so this is a problem. So then in many cases, the food goes through the digestive tract. It's a little bit overly acidic. In many cases, what that happens is the body doesn't want to leave it in there very long because it may burn the inside of the intestines, so it pushes it through, so the person ends up with diarrhea. In addition to that, they don't have the alkalinity and the pH done properly for proper absorption from nutrients, and the body starts to slowly have nutrient deficiencies because the bile is no longer present in order to neutralize the acidity. It's like this. If your soil is too acidic, or too acid, if you're trying to plant a crop, you've either got to put a potash or lime or whatever you got to add to it to make it more acidic or to make it more alkaline so the crop will grow. Otherwise, the crop simply will be unhealthy. The same thing is true with our body. Our body is designed to function at a certain pH as far as proper nutrient absorption. And if you don't have the proper nutrients in your body in high enough concentrations with the proper pH, your body simply can't absorb them. And when they can't be absorbed, they pass through you from the small intestine into the large intestine out of the body, and your body starts to lose energy reserves. In fact, I always tell people, the first day your body takes in less energy than it puts out is your first day of illness. You think, wow, that sounds profound. Well, it wasn't my quote, it was somebody else's quote. It was Gary Reams' quote. But that's exactly what he said. He said, the first day your body takes in less energy than it puts out is your first day of illness, because your body starts to deteriorate. And see, and that's why your body's, like Austin said earlier, God didn't just stick a gallbladder in there because somebody needs to take it out. He didn't give you a set of tonsils, which are one of the first lines of defense of the immune system, because somebody needs to take it out. He didn't give you an appendix because somebody's supposed to take it out. I mean, I know doctors that routinely, during hysterectomies, take out people's appendixes and gallbladders and whatever else they want to take out so they can get more surgical fees for it. Oh, this is just routine surgery. While we're here, we're taking out both ovaries. We're going to take out your appendix. And since you've been having some gallbladder problems, we're going to take out your gallbladder too. You're like, but wait a minute. All I wanted you to do was just an ultrasound to see if I was okay. Now you want to remove all these organs. I don't want you to take all these organs.
Yep.
Well, but if you don't want me to take the organs, then you need to go see another doctor. I don't want to work with you. But it took me 6 months to get an appointment with you. Well, it's just 6 months. It's too bad. You can go with another doctor. You're either going to remove these organs and do what I tell you to do, or I'm just going to not work with you. And you're like, but I don't know what to do. So my mother-in-law, she has this big toe issue where it's kind of one of her toes is hooked over another toe. She's got like a bunion on it, or whatever you want to call it. And so the doctor wants to put her under. He did it. She had it on one foot, did a great job on her using laser. Now he wants to do it on the other foot. The problem is she's 83 years old. And the first time he did it a couple of years ago, he put her under anesthesia against my advice, and he gave her a bunch of pills to take against my advice to reduce anxiety, and her brain went to mush for 6 months. 6 months, he could have used a local to deaden it. It didn't have to be under general anesthesia, and he didn't have to give her any kind of drugs in order to reduce her anxiety. And so I spoke with her yesterday, and I said, if you're going to go in for the surgery again, please don't put us through 6 months of pre-Alzheimer's. Okay, acting like you're nuts because you decided to take these drugs. I said, it took you 6 months, surely, to get this junk out of your system. And I said, don't do this again. Please, just go in, get a local, get it fixed. Don't take any anxiety drugs and all the weird stuff they want you to take. He'll still do the surgery for you. He'll still do a great job, and you won't have to deal with the blowback. Remember, guys, in some cases, up to 1% to 2% of the population who undergoes anesthesia dies from it in some hospitals. Now, that means you don't come out of the anesthesia. You just die. I mean, if that doesn't clear enough the first time. And so is it really worth having 100 switches on the wall and go, and me telling you, go flip a switch, and if you get the wrong one, there's 100 switches, you're going to get electrocuted on the spot. You'd be like, well, Ted, why would I do that? Yeah, that's the question. Why would I do that? Why would you do that? Now, if it's something that absolutely has to be done, and you can't get a local, and you absolutely have to have surgery, and some kind of emergency surgery or whatever, you absolutely have to go under anesthesia, okay, go under the anesthesia. But do your best to avoid anesthesia as much as you can, because I've had seen multiple studies linking excessive amounts of anesthesia to increase rates of cognitive decline. So, guys, do your best to stay away from all of these types of protocols that are so invasive using general anesthesia because of the let me give you another example. My mother-in-law, Shirley, her husband, they got married, oh, gosh, it's been 20 years ago now. They're married for 15 years, and he died. About 20 years ago, he came to me, and he said, well, he says, the doctor tells me that I need to have a quadruple bypass. And I'm like, well, have you gone to another doctor? We have some more in your area who will basically help you as far as changing your diet using chelation therapy, which will help to clean the coronary arteries out and help to get heavy metals out of your body and basically, in some cases, completely restore proper blood flow to the heart without the use of bypass surgery. He goes, no, my doctor told me this was a routine surgery. It was no big deal. And he just wants to go ahead and do it and get it over with so I can continue to lead my normal life. And I went, I went, stop! This is not routine surgery. Just because he does this all the time and it's routine for him, this is a major deal. In some cases, they actually pull your heart out of your body and they're working on it. And they start changing valves in it and doing all kinds of other things. They find other things wrong with it. And I said, and 40% of the people who undergo this type of surgery, they're never the same. They're never even able to go to work again. And 99% of them have a permanent personality change, plus a whole bunch of them stroke while they're on the heart-lung machine. I said, this is not routine. This is a very, very invasive surgery that has horrible, debilitating long-term side effects for almost every single person who undergoes it, including the personality changes. And he says, well, he told me I could have personality changes. And I said, you tell him what the percentage is? Well, he says pretty much 99% of the people have a personality change. And I said, well, why is that okay with you? Because, you know, you and I have talked about this often, and we've talked to the listeners about this. Your heart is an energetic field that's like 500 times stronger than your brain. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, the word tells us. This energy field encompasses our body. When you disconnect the heart from the body thinks it's dead. Did everybody just hear what I just said? It thinks it's dead.
Yeah.
Because now you no longer have a heart attached. It's out of the body. And now you're in a heart-lung machine. So you put the heart and the lungs back together again. You sew it up and everything still works. Your body's now dealing with this unbelievable PTSD induced by a heart being taken out of it. And it's basically dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, you're not supposed to pull my heart out. Okay? This is the problem with these types of surgeries. Now, I'm not saying that they're not necessary sometimes. I got that. Sometimes they have to be done because you may have an acute situation. But the reality is this. If you have an option and you're not hospitalized right now and they're trying to keep you alive and they've got to do the surgery immediately, try dietary approaches. Try a healthier lifestyle. There are all kinds of natural things that you can do. And, of course, Warren, while he was under the heart-lung machine, had a stroke. Okay, came out of the surgery, never the same again. Couldn't, I mean, he's in his late probably mid-60s when this happened. Could no longer play golf the way he had played it for many, many years. He basically had a complete and total personality change. I mean, completely changed his personality. And I'm like, wow, really? And then, bless his heart, he lived for like another 10 years. And he died like 5 years ago. He had a massive stroke and died, you know, 5 years ago. And just dropped in the shower and was dead. And he was a great guy too. He taught me how to play golf. And the sad part about it is I tried my best to say, talk to some other medical professionals. But here's what they do. And I shouldn't even talk about all this stuff today. Here's what they do. In many cases, they scare you half to death. Oh, you know, you don't want to wait. You don't want to wait. Oh no, man. You wait, you're going to die. You're going to die in a week. You're going to die in a month. You drop dead right now. This is a widowmaker. This is a widowmaker. You die right now. And you're like, you're like, when can you do the surgery? When can you do the surgery? Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have insurance? Yeah, I've got insurance. It'll cover everything. All right. Do the surgery tomorrow. We're going to medevac you. Okay, I've seen it all, guys. I have seen this exact scenario. I've seen it over and over and over again. Don't operate under fear. Fear is the mind killer. Don't do that. The Bible says perfect love casts out fear. Fear is the spirit killer too, because it interferes you. Spirit, the frequency that's in you through the Holy Spirit, if you've been born again and you're a child of God through Jesus Christ. The spirit that's in you is not a spirit of fear, but is the power of a sound mind. That's what the Word tells us. And guys, if you allow yourself to operate under fear, you're always going to make bad choices because you're going to get pushed into the decision. You know, here's what I always look at. It's like this, Austin. And how many times have you heard me say this, Austin? If you don't know, don't go. If you're not sure about it, just don't do it. Nobody's forcing you to do anything. You see these car guys. And don't get me wrong, guys. I got a lot of my friends are car sales guys, and they're really good people. And I've got some really good friendships with them, and some of them are absolutely wonderful. And they're not like this. But every once in a while, you go to a high-pressure dealership, and they'll take your car keys away from you. And they'll give you a deal. And then they'll tell you they don't know where your car is. It happened, me and Austin, years ago, we were trading a pickup truck in on a different pickup truck. And this one dealership said, we'll beat anybody's deal. Drive to us. If we don't beat the deal, we'll give you a tank of gas for free. And Austin and I said, what the heck? Why not? Why not? We'll go over and take a look at it. And the guys, I also will tell you, good Lord is sitting here with me right now. You know, in my heart, in my mind, in my spirit, and His Holy Spirit is filling this room. This is the truth. We get over there. Number one, they don't beat the deal. Number two, they tell me the car is gone. They don't know where it is, and we've been waiting for an appraisal. So I picked up my telephone. I looked at the guy. I said, I'm now dialing 911. My car has been stolen. He goes, what do you say? I said, I'm calling the sheriff. I said, my car has been stolen. You don't know where it is. So I started. I go, nah. He goes, stop. Stop. And I'm like, what do you mean? My car's stolen. He goes, no. Your car. I mean, literally 60 seconds later, the truck pulls up. Okay. And I'm like, and I looked at the guys and I said, guys, really? And just right after that, that dealership was closed. And the guy who owned that dealership ended up going to prison for fraud. This is a big Chevrolet dealership here in Central Florida. Austin, did I pretty much summarize that, pretty much what happened?
Yeah, and I mean, to elaborate a little more, though, so you guys know, it wasn't like, you know, we asked them, hey, where's it at? And, you know, it just kind of took a second. We asked them, they took it back for an appraisal, a very quick appraisal, and said, hey, what are you guys going to put it on trade? Okay, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I hand them the keys. Like 45 minutes later, they give us an absolutely horrible deal. I mean, it's a horrible deal. Trading's horrible. Deal's horrible on the truck we're going to buy. I'm like, this is just stupid. I told them, I don't want to do this. It was one of my old trucks. And he goes, yeah, this is a horrible deal. So he said, we need the truck back. And they go, okay, we'll get the truck back. You know, you sure you don't want to do this deal? No, we don't want to do the deal. Okay, we'll get you a truck back. So we're standing there in the dealership for like 10 more minutes. I walk over to the guy. I said, dude, this dealership's not that big. I said, I want my truck. I'm ready to leave. You guys got me hacked off. I'm getting hungry. I want to leave. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I don't know where your truck's at. I got to find it. Well, no, that's wrong answer. I said, I want my truck back. And he goes, okay, let me see what I can do with it. So we'll stay for like another 5 minutes. And finally, I find him again. I said, dude, where is my truck? I'm not going to ask you this again. Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask around and see if we can find it. And then Dad goes, okay, fair enough. We're going to get the truck right now. Since you guys can't find it, we're going to find it. We'll get the sheriff's department involved. I'm sure they'll be able to find it immediately. And they go, whoa. And then exactly the way it went. And it was, some dealerships are like this, not a lot of them. But some guys are like this, and it can be in anything, in different types of sales. If anybody starts pushing you into that direction, whether it be a doctor, whether it be an attorney, whether it be a salesman, when people start pushing you to do that, you got to do this right now. You have no, you need to do it right now. If you don't do this deal right now, you're going to lose the deal tomorrow. We're not going to offer the rebate tomorrow. Okay, guess what? I don't need the rebate anymore. I'm not going to buy the truck. Goodbye. That's my always answer. Never be willing to do anything to have something. You always have to be willing to walk away, even if it's from a doctor. And I'm not saying, you know, if there's something life-threatening going on that needs to be done immediately, you know, okay, we got a compound fracture, something stupid, you know, like that. Well, that's not stupid, but that's a serious incident. You know, we got to get the bone back in place. That's different. But when you're looking at stuff, when they're talking about cholesterol, and they're talking about heart, and you're sitting there and you feel perfectly good and you're perfectly healthy, and they start saying, we need to take this organ out. We need to operate on you with this. We need to do this, and we got to do it right now. You don't have time. We got to do it right now. And you're going, my blood pressure's good. I feel good. I'm mentally acute. I really don't understand why you want to start operating on me. Don't ask questions. You don't ask questions. If you don't want to deal with it, you need to go to another doctor. I'm not going to see exactly what Dad said to do that. I've heard that so many times. Well, if you don't want to listen to me, you need to go see another doctor. And like Dad said, well, especially with the medical industry now and the insurance company, you're like, well, you're the only one in my district that'll take care of me right here that'll cover this. Well, that's fine. So you either do what I tell you or you go somewhere else and you get new insurance. But I already pay $1,500 a month for insurance. I can't afford more insurance. Well, it's not my problem. Either you do the surgery, I'm dropping you as a patient. And they're like, oh my gosh, that is a predicament that you don't want to be in. And if you are in that predicament, as Dad just said, if you don't know, don't go. Never be pressured into doing something you're not completely content on doing, especially if it doesn't feel right. Very well said on that, Dad.
Yeah, and you know, also, I'm going to say one more story. Since we're on this kick and parade today, we always pick certain days to do certain kick and parades. This is the kick and parade for today. I remember years ago, I had a really good aunt. Her name was Audrey Freitag. I mean, wonderful person. One of the most godly people I've ever met. Incredible person. She's so nice, so knowledgeable, knew everything about the Brewer family, who came from where, what part of Germany, what they did, how they immigrated. I learned so much about the actual in-depth background of my family from her. The lady was like a walking encyclopedia. Brilliant mind. And she went to see her doctor, and they told her she needed to have a bypass done because she was having a little bit of chest pain. And now remember, she's 84 years old. I believe she was 84. She's in her early 80s. And I said to her, Audrey, chances are that you're going to die from the surgery. You're 84, and they're going to put you under anesthesia and do a four-way bypass on you. And if there's anything else, they're going to do that too. And I said, how do you feel? She goes, I feel great. She goes, I walk like, you know, 2 miles a day. I said, okay. I said, do you really think you need to do this at this age? And she goes, well, he told me I don't really have a choice. And I said, do we have a choice? Well, he told me it was routine. Well, no, I said, that's what they always do. And I told her the same thing. And I told her what had happened to Warren. And so she basically listened to the doctor. And she went in, and she basically died. And she ended up having to replace a valve in her heart while they were up there. And then she basically never recovered from the surgery. And she died in the hospital. And they asked me to come up and preach the eulogy for her funeral. And I did. And one of the finest people I've ever known, and I still highly respect her and her husband, Arnold. Now they're both gone to be with the Lord, but they both rest in peace. And it just saddened me, Austin, that she could have probably lived another 5-10 years, but she chose to go the medical route. And whenever they start telling people that they're in their mid-80s to do anesthesia and surgery, I got to question motives, guys. I've really got to question motives, because when there's such a high probability they're going to die from the anesthesia, from the surgery, what's the motive here? What is the motive? It can't be just the money, can it? Oh, gosh, did I say that? I said that, didn't I? Sometimes it's just the money, guys. It's they got their 4X wives, and they're working their 70 hours a week. And their wives basically saw him as a trophy husband when they found him, and they basically hooked into him, and they started having babies with him. They got these child support payments, and they got to make these extra car payments for all these kids now and all these extra wives that are left because it's all part of the divorce declaration. And they got to make all the extra house payments, too. And, oh, my gosh. I'm short $10,000 this month for all this alimony and child support. I got to do some more surgeries. Oh, did I just say that? Yeah, I did say that. Happens all the time. Now, you say all doctors are like that? Absolutely not. Probably not 5% of them are. 95% of them are good, God-fearing people. They really are. But there are about 5% out there. You got to watch yourself. That's why it's so important that you get second, third, fourth, fifth opinions if you need it.
Yep.
To make sure that you got your butt covered. I didn't say butt. Because, guys, it's just so important that a lot of these guys are broke. And they are trying their best to cover the nut every month of their financing. You say, well, I can't believe they're like that. Guys, I can't either. Some of them are. That's why so many of these guys get busted for doing chemotherapy on people and cancer surgery on people who don't even have cancer. I read you the article on that a few weeks ago. Be very, very careful. Always get multiple opinions. And I saw one more article here. I want to cover this today. And then we'll start on some other stuff. Men with high testosterone levels are less likely to be religious, the study says. Now, I mean, there's all kinds of different things here that I want to stop with and talk about this for a second.
Yeah.
High testosterone levels are often associated with aggression, but a new study suggests that the hormone may also affect your religiosity. Researchers at the University in Canada, which I wouldn't trust anything coming out of these guys, found that men with high testosterone are less likely to be religious. In the study, the researchers analyzed over 1,000 men ages 57 to 85, including their weight and height and saliva and blood samples. And participants also completed questionnaires about how often they attended religious services, etc. So they're not looking at it from a, do you pray every day? Do you have a deep-seated relationship with Jesus Christ? Are you a born-again child of God? No, they want to know how many times you go to church. Okay, and all that kind of stuff. Now, here's the thing. God doesn't want us to have religion. I hate to tell you that. Newsflash for everybody. Religion turns into the Catholic Church. It turns into this unbelievable mess that I've seen so many times in churches that I've worked with and been around. It turns into this giant mess. Now, you're saying all churches are bad? Didn't say that. There are a lot of good churches out there. A lot of God-fearing pastors who really mean well and do well for their church and their people in the church. They really are. A lot of them aren't. So a lot of guys who have testosterone, who have higher levels of testosterone like me, I like it 600, I'm, you know, 62, I go into a situation where I see some kind of shenanigans going on behind the scenes or money being spent with things that are stupid, and I realize very quickly this because I'm giving money and other people are giving money and they're just wasting money. And so from a testosterone standpoint, I'm less tolerant to put up with that kind of trash. There we go. I just said that again too. Why would you be that way, Ted? Because quite frankly, you know, when you work hard for your money and you having to pay so much to the government anyhow all the time, and you give part of it away to a nonprofit organization, which we all should be doing, we all should be blessing other people, and you watch them squander it, it's very frustrating to me. When people say, well, give as you give unto the Lord, don't worry about how they squander it. No. I don't look at it that way. Here's how I look at it. I've got really good seed here. I got really good seed. It's the hard-earned income that I've earned that I have after taxes. Okay, I've got this money that I have that I can do something with. Let's say it's $1,000. I've got $1,000 worth of seed here, and I want to give it to the best place to get the highest return of the seed that I possibly can. And all of a sudden, I start looking into these churches, and I start finding out, number one, their books are closed. Their books are closed. In other words, nobody knows where any of the money goes. Well, as soon as I see that, I got to kind of step out and go, well, you know what? Unless I can designate the money to where I want it to go, I'm kind of not going to be able to do this because, quite frankly, why are the books closed? I mean, what the heck's wrong with that? Why are the books closed? I mean, why can't you see where the money's going that you're giving? That's number one. Number two, they make bad decisions. They got boards that are just idiots. Now, I've seen that. I've seen idiot boards. And they like to waste money on stuff and constantly things that simply don't make any sense until they bankrupt the church or the facility. I've seen that multiple times. So you have to look at good soil for your good seed. And that's what I do. I've got a group of charities that I work with. And I know the people. I know the people, including churches, that I work with, that I take and spread money around with these guys. Because I know that when I plant the seed, it's going to give me a good harvest. You say, what does that mean? Well, the Bible says it's the law of sowing and reaping. Now, does that mean we should be giving stuff to get stuff back? Not really, but it's a law that's a reciprocal law. In other words, you give nice thoughts back. You treat people with kindness. They're usually kind back to you. And so what I always try to do is try to find the places that are going to be the best in order to donate money to that I feel as though they're going to use the money properly. There you go. That's a better way of saying it. And see, and that's what I do. Because guys, and so now they're telling me because I got high testosterone, I'm less likely to be religious. No, I'm less likely to be lied to. I'm less likely to be gullible. I'm less likely to let the liberal media tell me what I'm supposed to believe and what I'm not supposed to believe. I'm less likely to say, okay, let's go ahead and compromise everything because my testosterone levels are so low now, I've turned into a complete and total and I could do anything like I want to do that they tell me to do. I'm going to be a mindless amoeba, which I've heard pastors call the people in the church, mindless amoebas. I'm going to be a mindless amoeba that's going to just give where I'm supposed to give, do what I'm supposed to do, walk where I'm told to do, and shut up! Okay, whoa. That's not me. I don't do that at all. Why? Because my testosterone is high. I don't allow that to affect me like that. And see, so when I see articles like this coming out of the whack bag mess up in Canada that they've got going on up there right now, Austin, and they're telling me that guys that have high testosterone are less likely to be religious, my response is pretty good with that. You know why? Because I'm not religious. I don't want to be religious. I want a relationship with the Most High God through His Son, Jesus Christ, who sanctified me through the cross. That's what I want. I don't want to be religious. I don't want to sit there and just go, No. I like to sit there and go, what did he say? And I'm going to stop. Well, I got to stop before I get in trouble. I'm going to say one more thing. I've heard preachers, oh gosh, I don't want to say any names here, who'll start telling you, repeat after me. Repeat after me. And they'll start saying nonsense. And the church will sit there and mindlessly confess all this negative mess. And I'm like, whoa! I never repeat after me until I hear what he says. I want to know what he says before I repeat it and speak it over myself. Because I'm not a mindless amoeba. I'm not somebody who's going to fall, you know, for every wind and teaching. I'm not going to do that. The Bible says that in these latter times, some will follow basically every wind and teaching that floats around to hear what their itching ears want to hear. That isn't me. I want to hear the Word of God, what it says, and how it relates to me. So anyhow, I'm sorry I'm preaching here today a little bit awesome, I saw that article on the testosterone and lack of being religious. I thought, yeah, I could do that. Because high testosterone means I'm not going to put up with a whole bunch of nonsense. But that doesn't mean I don't have a relationship with the Most High. Always remember that, guys. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. Strange show today. One of those weird shows. That's a weird show today. I love you. I appreciate you. Thanks for getting your supplements from us. And remember, guys, it's not by power, it's not by might, it's by my Spirit, saith the Lord. I appreciate you, guys. Austin, I'll do the write-up. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
I got it, bud. Yes, definitely, you know, we needed to get a good health show in. We had a lot of articles we've been working on, so I even have more that I didn't even get to right here. We kind of went off topic with a few things, but it was always great. And so, yes, if you guys need anything, you know where to get a hold of us, healthmasters.com. Also, you can give us a call anytime, Monday through Friday, 1-800-726-1834. The probiotic 100 billion is on sale right now for product of the week. Be sure to check that out. That is an incredibly strong probiotic formula, 100 billion CFUs per capsule in nitrogen sealed blister packs. Very, very strong. Great product if you're trying to make sure you're having bowel health and digestive health where it needs to be, especially if you have ever used any antibiotics in the past. So be sure to check that out and also vote for the other products that are available right now for product of the week. It looks like Resveratrol Plus is pulling pretty strong as the winner right now. So if you guys want anything else to win, be sure to get on the website and vote for the products that you want to see win tomorrow, and we will make it happen. You guys, we appreciate you. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for all the emails and the comments that we get on a regular basis. We really do appreciate your support. We love you guys. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.